Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Cullum O'Mungain sitting in for Claire. Now, with the news this week that Taylor Swift will be bringing her Eras tour to the Aviva Stadium next year, and after Harry Styles' triumphant Slane performance, it's an exciting time for concert goers. But it's not all confetti cannons and sing-alongs. Across social media, the topic of how fans are behaving at these gigs has come into question, from secretly filming and shaming other audience members to the more extreme end of things, with fans attacking each other or even attacking the artist on stage. What exactly is happening, and why have live shows changed so much? Well, here to discuss this are founder of 8radio.com, Simon Marr, and music researcher Andrea Cleary. You're both very welcome to the show. Good morning to you both. Andrea, I'll start with you. Why are we having this discussion? What kind of behaviour are we seeing at gigs that's got so out of control?
Yeah, so it's kind of a twofold conversation. As you mentioned there, there's the kind of fan-on-fan behaviour and fan-on-artist behaviour. Fan-on-artist behaviour, you're looking at situations like Harry Styles being groped by a fan at a concert. We saw a similar thing with Paul Mescal on the red carpet as well. Taylor Swift fans who planned a tribute of sorts to her, in which they decided to hold up photographs of her grandmother who'd passed away during a song that she'd written about her grandmother, which is obviously a very upsetting thing, especially when you're filming Taylor Swift and posting that online and filming her reaction. And we had, we were discussing Bebe or Bebe? Bebe Rexha, who was hit in the face by a phone that was thrown by a fan who was quoted as saying that they thought it would be funny. So there is...
For
everybody, I don't know. And then there's also the idea of shaming behaviour at gigs. Fans who don't know the words, for example, will be filmed and put up on TikTok. And the idea is that these are not real fans. These people have taken your ticket, and that we should shame these people for not being involved enough with the show. So it's all going a bit mad.
Right. It's bad behaviour, though, Simon, isn't anything new. Anyone reading the NME during the 90s would have heard female fans at gigs complain about being groped during crowd surfing. If you go back to the 70s, spitting at punk gigs was known. The violence of the mosh pit at certain gigs.
Oh, yeah. This isn't a new phenomenon. I suppose it's the way it's happening is definitely something new. And it's the way that fans particularly, not even just are interacting with other fans, but the way that they're interacting with the band. You know, there used to be an idea that you went to a band and there was almost a privilege that you're getting to see them. You're getting to see them in real life. But now it's as if there's an expectation that, okay, well, if I've paid my money and I'm coming to this gig, I want to interact with you as well. I deserve more than you playing all of these brilliant songs to me.
Right. Is this a function, Andrea, of social media where bands and through their promotion at least have the appearance of having a conversation or a dialogue with fans, and people build it up in their head that there's a relationship there?
I think absolutely. I think it's partly on the artists themselves. Their use of social media will give fans the idea that they are much closer parties than they actually are. There's also... When you talk about the fans that are going to gigs now, specifically these kind of large pop gigs, they're young fans. For a lot of these fans, it will be their first gig. We had, you know, two to three years, depending what country you're in, where there was no live music. So there was no idea of being able to go into a gig as a young person, as we all might remember doing, seeing what the so-called gatekeepers were doing and modelling your behaviour on that. Whereas now you're learning from what is happening online, what you're seeing on TikTok, and a lot of those videos and a lot of the behaviour that you see online tends to be the more extreme behaviour. So it just begets more extreme behaviour at gigs.
And you're also seeing, Simon, maybe people who don't live any aspect of their life unless it happens on a camera. So there's an everyday performative aspect to all aspects of their life. This is just I suppose, a higher octane version of that.
Absolutely it is. And you're seeing it, what I've started to see at gigs is you're starting to see a sort of a hostility between people within the audience, because I've seen shots and you see quite a lot of stuff on social media, and it's people who have now got their backs turned to the artist because they do need that performative aspect where they're in shot. So whoever the actor, the performer is on stage, that they will get somebody to film them or to be taking photographs of them while they are performing, and that this is part of the thing, is that you have to be part of the show.
And is that and part it, of the band's own it, social it, media output that, you know, you get retweets or you get some of this material being used as
oh, you will. And it will work as a promotion, but for the other members of the audience, it will drive them mad. And for the performers as well, because even if you take the promotional side out of it, the way that a gig works is it works on the performance out and then the energy that comes back from the audience. But if the audience have their backs turned to you because they're taking part in a TikTok video, you know, is that dynamic is immediately interrupted. And for the people who aren't into that aspect, who just want to watch the gig, that's when people start to get really, really cranky. And that's where audience in particular gets cranky with the rest of the audience.
All right. Obsession, Andrea. Swifties, the Bayhive. Explain.
Well,
well explain
where do I start?
At least in terms of their behaviour at gigs.
So at the moment, at Taylor Swift gigs in particular, if you were to go on TikTok, you would find a lot of videos of people screaming along the lyrics. Now, when I say screaming along, imagine what you think that means and times it by 10, like to the point where anybody around them will not be able to hear the artist. And what I find so fascinating, you know, I've been following this idea on TikTok for a while now. What I find very fascinating is that most of the people within this online fandom will defend this behaviour. They'll say, like you said, we've paid for this show. This artist means a lot to me, and how I enjoy it is up to me. And real fans will behave this way. Don't come to a Taylor Swift gig if you're not going to scream along, is something that's said a lot online. And it is that sort of hyper-individualistic fan culture that is existent now because of things like TikTok and because of things like social media, and because that all cements during the pandemic as well. So you don't have the gig as a collective experience anymore. You have the gig as an opportunity for you to express how much the artist means to you. And it can become quite competitive. You know, you have fans sharing extremely personal stories, extremely traumatic stories with one another, and explaining how a certain song or a certain artist has got them through that period of their life. And it's that competitive element of, this person means more to me than they do to you, so you don't get to police my behaviour at gigs.
Simon, as has been mentioned a couple of times, you know, this was all preceded by the pandemic. Is that the catalyst here, that a 3-year period of extreme introspection and, you know, fairly heavy time for people's mental health has now been unleashed into a communal experience with people releasing all this pent up tension?
I think that's definitely a big part of it. And as Andrea mentioned at the start, the idea that a lot of people who are getting involved in this behaviour were probably never at a gig before the pandemic time, so up to 2019. So these are their first experiences, and because they have all of this, and probably a lot of their only interaction with many of these artists was through live streams or some way that bands and artists were trying to make some sort of a connection with their audiences while they couldn't perform live and while they couldn't be seen in public, is that it's one of those things now that as we progress on 3 years later, people just haven't learned that dynamic. They haven't learned that relationship now. And my hope would be that this is a cyclical thing, that we're going to be at a point where people will get used to it. You know, the hype will die down and people will decide, OK, I want to be at this. But there's probably somewhere where there's going to be a responsibility for an artist as well. You know, an artist will have to redefine what their relationship is with their audience, whether that be in the bigger social media world or whether it's within the arena at a gig.
Of course, Andrea, gigs are not cheap. So as you were saying, you know, if you pay an awful lot of money, maybe that contributes to the hyper-individual experience. People feel they're out of pocket and this is their gig too.
Absolutely. I was at Harry Styles at Slane recently, and I was talking to somebody who hadn't been to Slane since the 1980s. And the idea that there was dynamic pricing really surprised them. Used to be, if you were to camp out the night before, whatever it might be, you'll get down to the front. Whereas now, for a lot of the big pop gigs, you have the idea of the golden circle. And those...
Well, in the case of the Harry Styles, I think you could pay for a platinum ticket, but the platinum price got you no platinum access. Mm. It was just the price of the ticket.
Absolutely, yeah. And so it's this idea that fans can be segregated dependent on how much money they want to pay. So if you're paying, you know, in some cases in Europe and certainly in the US, over $1,000 for a ticket, you are going to have probably more of a sense of entitlement for how you can and cannot behave at that gig. But also for the fans who are way up in the nosebleed seats, there's, I imagine, and what I've seen through behaviours online is that there's this idea that you need to find a way for the artist to notice you. And if that is filming yourself doing something out of the ordinary at the gig and trying to, you know, get Taylor Swift to see you doing this dance or doing this screaming or whatever it is, or in more extreme cases, throwing a phone, throwing a bottle, doing something to get the artist's attention, because you have that idea of this one-to-one connection that you mentioned, Simon. But the dynamic pricing really brings a kind of a hierarchy of fandom into it.
As John Lennon said, those in the cheap seats clap your hands, those in the good seats jangle your jewels. Yes. It is taken out onto the street, Simon, as well. I heard a teenager saying that she's given up on wearing a Nirvana t-shirt because she can't walk down the street without being stopped by, quote unquote, the real fans asking her to name 10 songs.
Yeah, but in fairness, there will always be that. Like, you know, I can't imagine a time when there wasn't, when people weren't going into the central bank, you know, and talking to the Cure heads and saying, look, okay, name, you know, 5 Cure albums, you know, what's Robert Smith's Ma's name, that sort of stuff. I think that is something that will always go on, but I think the competitive fandom is probably a new enough thing where it's moved on from just being possibly a bit of, you know, musical snobbishness or the exclusivity of being really into the band. I prefer the earlier stuff. But that idea now, that absolute competitive fandom, that's takes it from being probably a positive force to being a negative one.
All right. Do the artists need to lead on this, Andrea? Because Christy Moore famously used to ask for silence and people might be even removed from certain gigs if they were singing along or making noise during a particular performance. Does the artist need to establish what the expected standard of behaviour are, or is the power with the fans? Are they afraid of alienating them?
I think it was always this kind of, as you said, kind of natural cycle. Things did kind of end up settling themselves out. And then somebody like Christy Moore, closing the bars as well was a really big thing during the show for him. Artists, I think, do have a responsibility to speak out if they see behaviour that is potentially dangerous and if behaviour is potentially dangerous for them. We live in a time now where the fan-artist connection feels as close as it ever was, but is actually completely and entirely disconnected from one another. Taylor Swift doesn't do interviews anymore. Harry Styles doesn't do interviews. We don't learn anything about these people. And anything that we do know is from intensely curated, you know, the idea of Taylor Swift, she puts Easter eggs in her social media posts for people to work out as though they're clues. But we don't know anything about them, so they do need to address it.
All right, and her approach to not doing interviews, mirrored, of course, by RT management today and our attempts to get any interviews from them. We're back in a minute after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.